Coming up, we are previewing the 2026 NBA draft by looking at the top four. I'm talking to Darren Peterson. We're looking at the guards. I got Keaton Wagler, Braden Burries, and Christian Anderson all on the show. We're looking at the bigs. I got Adai Mara on the show as well. And then we're looking at some sleepers in the first round as well. Later on, joining me will be Adai Mara and Dalen Swain. And of course, what's going to go on with Giannis Antetokounmpo? We get into all that right now. Welcome back to the Kevin O'Connor Show. We have a loaded episode today, talking to a whole bunch of NBA draft prospects. But first, I want to talk about the Giannis Antetokounmpo situation, as well as Trae Young re-signing with the Washington Wizards. Let's start off with Giannis. Still not resolved as of about 3 o'clock Eastern right now. Still no decision from the Milwaukee Bucks. My understanding is that this is between Boston and Miami as the best offer that Milwaukee is debating internally in their front office. There have been mystery teams that have inquired about Giannis. I know one team at least in the top four, drafting in this year's top four, inquired about Giannis. Giannis does not want to go there. So I don't think that there is a true mystery team that's going to come out of nowhere over the top with the best offer for Giannis. We'll see. Things can happen at the last minute. But Boston-Miami seems to be the destination for Antetokounmpo that the Bucks are deciding between. The question is, what way are they going to go? The Heat, we know a lot about their offer. It's been widely reported already. Jaime Jaquez, Tyler Hero, Khalil Ware in a collection of first-round picks, including number 13 in Tuesday's draft, is something along the lines that the Heat are offering to the Milwaukee Bucks. Boston, on the other hand, is giving up something around Jaylen Brown. My league sources have said that the Celtics have been unwilling so far to give up Ugo Gonzalez, Peyton Pritchard, a lot of first-round picks attached to Jaylen Brown. I'd imagine at this point of negotiations, Boston has been willing to give something up alongside Jaylen Brown, considering how far down the road they have gone for one of the five best players in basketball in Giannis. My gut feeling is that we're going to see Giannis land in Boston. And the main reason is because of something that I think is often overlooked and under-discussed in this entire saga involving Giannis, and that's, what do the Bucks want? My league sources say the Bucks want to win next year. They don't want to be a bottom feeder team. They don't want to be a bottom five team in the league. They don't even have the rights to their own first-round pick until 2031. So even if they wanted to be bad, in today's NBA, with the new lottery rules, there's no incentive to bottom out, especially for the Bucks without their first-round draft pick. They want to keep winning. Which player on the table gives the Bucks the best opportunity to keep winning games? It's Jaylen Brown. Jaylen Brown is a Finals MVP who just averaged 29-7-5 last year for the Celtics. He was voted sixth in MVP voting. He dragged the team that people thought might miss the playoffs all the way to the 2 seed. That said, of course, the Heat offer, this isn't to dismiss it. It's a very good offer. It is full of really high-value pieces that could be valuable to the Bucks. Jaquez was arguably the sixth man of the year last year. He could get a lot better moving forward. Tyler Hero, a quintessential 20-point-per-game scorer who can play with and without the ball. What happens in a new system, in a new environment? He could be a lot better for that team. Khalil Ware, a guy who has been very solid under Eric Spoelstra. Maybe he's unleashed in Milwaukee and becomes a better two-way center, one of the rare centers who can shoot threes and block shots. And never mind the number 13 pick in this year's draft would give up a really good quality prospect for Milwaukee. It's a good offer, but the Bucks' intentions reminds me so much of years ago with San Antonio when they were trading Kawhi Leonard. The Celtics offered Jaylen Brown, a young Jaylen Brown, for Kawhi Leonard, and the Spurs said no because they wanted players who could help now. They wanted DeMar DeRozan. And so that isn't to say that the Spurs made the right or wrong decision at the time, and this isn't to say that the Bucks are making the right or wrong decision today. Jaylen Brown is a far different player than DeMar DeRozan then. However, the Bucks want to keep winning and trying to compete. So I'd imagine we'll see a Bucks-Boston deal in the coming days ahead of the draft. Other news, Trae Young re-signing with the Washington Wizards, a four-year, $200-plus million contract with the Wizards with a player option on the fourth year. So much for getting a discount. We're going to see Trae Young re-signing in Washington. Very unusual that they sign him for this much. Very unusual it happens the day before the draft. Very unusual that it happens the day that we hear that Darren Peterson had a secret meeting with the Utah Jazz. Does this mean that the Wizards and DiBonsa are a match and that for Utah at number two, Peterson will be on the board for them? Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe it has nothing to do with each other. But I do think from a roster fit standpoint, Trae Young re-signed to a four-year deal with Trey Johnson last year as your lottery pick. And then Darren Peterson, fit isn't the deciding factor between DiBonsa, Boozer, and Peterson. But it's definitely a piece of the equation. And so I would imagine we're going to see A.J. DiBonsa go number one to the Washington Wizards as of 3 o'clock Eastern on Monday. And then number two, we'll see what happens with the Utah Jazz. Will it be Cam Boozer, as I still have in my latest mock, as my gut is saying? Or will it be Darren Peterson, who is, in all likelihood, the higher upside player? What a coincidence. I've got Darren Peterson on my podcast right now to talk about his game. He's my first of many guests that you're going to see drafted in the first round of the 2026 NBA draft. Here's Darren Peterson. All right, joining me today from Kansas, potential number one pick in the 2026 NBA draft, Darren Peterson. Darren, how you doing, man?
Great.
Appreciate you joining me today, man. I want to look at some clips with you from the high school level, because I feel like with your playmaking ability, it really was apparent in high school. When I just have this play on the screen, does your mind immediately go to where it is? Do you have that type of recollection before the play even plays? Or do you need to see it unfold?
This is, I think, a pass to John. Yeah. Jump up pass. Yeah, I remember. Knockdown.
What were you seeing here as you drove into the defense? Can you describe what you see here?
Obi tried to seal. His man got around. I tried to see him seal early. He got around. I know he's going to stay in front. Could have looked. He threw this to Obi. His man came in. John open.
Now, with jump passes like that to the corner, I noticed that's kind of a habit for you, especially at the high school level, playing with a bit more space. Mm. Is that something you practice, jump passes?
Jump pass? I think you got to just do those. You don't really practice.
That's a corner three in the NBA.
No doubt.
That's getting taken.
It's definitely not in the tank.
No disrespect, but.
For sure. For sure.
How about this one? Do you remember this play against Utah Prep?
I don't remember this one yet. I was diamond, though, for real.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, you had some nasty passes in high school. So when you're driving out of pick and roll here or ISO, whatever the type of situation, what are you looking at here before deciding to pass versus trying to score?
I'm attacking first. I know I feel like no one person can guard me, so it's always going to be help. So wherever that help comes from, we hitting that man.
So with you, your attack mindset, you're thinking score first, just pass second a lot of the time?
Not always score, but just at least putting pressure on the defense.
I see. So that's what it's about. It's more about like that's the goal, putting pressure on defense, then reacting to whatever the situation is.
No doubt.
I see. With this play, I like this play from you because I feel like it shows off your selflessness. It's just a quick decision, one-handed pass, quick outlet. Some guards, they get the ball and they just want to dribble.
Yeah.
You are immediately look for an opportunity with the outlet there.
Sure. No doubt. Yeah, that's me. At least on that was my job was facilitate, man.
Now, there's been reports around you view yourself as a point guard. Is that accurate?
I think combo, but I'm definitely.
I mean, that's kind of the nature of today's game, right?
For sure, being able to play both. So, but I think I'm comfortable with both.
I mean, I talked to Adaimara today, and he's like, he's, you know, loves facilitating. It's a big, there's forwards. Luka's huge, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
like,
there's different size players who handle the ball in today's league.
Sure.
What do you think about the nature of today's game? Like, what are your thoughts on the way basketball is played today?
I think it's in a great place. Like, I was going to say it's a guards game, but there's so many great bigs as well, like Joker, Wemby. So it's just like everybody's just like big guards now, kind of. Everybody can do everything. So I think I'm going to fit in.
How have you observed the way the game's evolved since you were a kid watching it to where it is today?
Growing up, I didn't watch a whole lot of basketball. Like, I was just working out. I didn't really watch a lot. But I remember watching, like, the Cavs and Warriors. it was kind of Warriors kind of ahead of their time. They were shooting tons of threes then too. So, but what's different now? I don't, from when I was watching it now, it's not a big difference to me.
I mean, I get what year were you born?
07.
07. So you were probably like what, like 10 years old? What would be those Cavs Warriors finals?
Yeah, that's when it was starting to
things were shifting already.
Yeah.
So I think in some ways, like you haven't seen the full evolution.
Besides, the bigs are now like overly being able to handle and shoot.
Yes, because those Cavs Warriors years with the Rockets, like PJ Tucker was playing the five, right? So, like it was a lot of small ball then.
So it was different.
Yeah, I think that's probably changed. Yeah. When it comes to the type of bigs nowadays, do you see yourself as somebody kind of playing with a big who can facilitate, like dribble handoffs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I think I can work whatever. I think I'm easy to play with.
Somebody who can do anything.
Yeah.
Now, this play, I forget this one. Oh, yeah, I like this play because the enthusiasm, the jump on the lob. I think sometimes, like you've remarked about this before, people saying, oh, Kansas, I don't care about basketball, but like it's BS. I think this is one of those plays that shows.
Definitely. If you ask every person I play with, the stuff that was being said was just super far from the truth.
This is another play I like from you that stood out. Pass to the corner, calling for him to shoot it. He doesn't. You kind of get frustrated.
Right, yeah, we got to fire those. Did we hit this? Okay, he made it. So I probably
he made the pull up. He took the pull up too, like a 1990s player.
Yeah,
right?
We got to shoot these. Though.
But this play, I think that shows the emotion. You're buying, like shoot it. Ah, you're
facts.
Pissed off about
get that
it.
Up. Yeah,
get it right.
For sure.
So I think little moments like that, when like you really watch, when people talk about missing 11 out of 35 games and all that, it doesn't tell the story of the intensity, the buy-in.
No doubt.
With you.
Sure.
Do you see yourself as more of like a leader by example in that regard? Because you've called yourself an antisocial loner.
I addressed that too. I think I used the wrong words at the time. What I meant, I was more to myself during that, what I had going on. I wasn't really looking for help. I was trying to like figure it out on my own. I should have said that. But definitely not antisocial or loner. If you ask people that are around me, they know I'm funny and outgoing. So I definitely used the wrong words at the time. But definitely not.
You see yourself as more being a vocal guy.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm definitely more lead by example, though. But I'm definitely open to talking.
Which is perfectly fine. Everybody's different, right?
For sure, no doubt.
Is there an example where you felt like you did have to lead, either in high school or in college?
Definitely a ton in high school because I had some younger guys and I tried to show them how to work. But in college, I did as much as I could, just being out in and out so much it was hard for me. But I tried to still be me as much as possible.
In high school, like, can you tell me a story about a time like where you feel like, I did lead in that moment and you felt good about that?
First thing that comes to mind, not really a specific thing, but one of my teammates, Gabe Naismith, is part of the agency that I'm with. Something that made me feel good is he told them, like, after watching a year of DP, like, I feel like I know how to work now. Like, I'm working different than I was before I was around him. So I think that was a huge thing to hear from someone I played with.
One of the things we didn't see from you as much at Kansas that I think pops up a little bit more in high school is you posting up back at the basket, and you look just incredibly comfortable in that area of the floor.
So it was definitely a lot of stuff I got that I didn't get to really do at Kansas. Not saying it was Kansas' fault, but just how things went. And I just made the most out of the decision I was in. Yeah, sure.
Now, with back to the basket, how do you see the role for this small part of your game, I'm sure, in the NBA? But, like, what's the role for a guard to be able to play in this area of the floor?
Closer to the rim, I think. You got, like, with Kobe, there were certain kill spots on the court that when he got to him, I could score from here at will. So I think it's important to be able to have those.
Is this something you've practiced?
For sure. Yeah, I've been working in the post a ton during this pre-draft just because players like Shea get to the post and get a lot of fadeaways out of there. And I watch a ton of Kobe. So
you mentioned Shea and Kobe. What are some moves from those guys that stand out to you that you try to download into your own game?
Yeah, not specifically moves in general, but like the kill spots. Like if you watch a ton of those guys, there's certain spots where they get a ton of baskets from, like the baselines and the elbows. I see.
Now, like you mentioned earlier, like you didn't watch a ton of basketball. You more just played.
Yeah. Like when I was young, for sure. But now as I got older, a film junkie. Like I study guys like these guys I'm about to go against. Like a lot of guards, I've been studying them since my senior year.
You watching YouTube Synergy? Like what's your source of where you're watching?
My trainer, Coach Phil Beckner, he clips them up for me. So a lot of those guys, if I studied a ton of their moves, so no way I can get hit by the moves.
You watching that like instead of Netflix, you know?
Yeah, I'm not huge on Netflix, but I watch movies. But Definitely like basketball.
I see. So if with you, I'm curious, like, you watch these playoffs live, like you're watching live games at night?
More clips of the playoffs, too. I see. So I just got myself a puppy, so it was hard to watch full games.
A puppy?
But yeah.
What type of dog?
Doberman Pinscher.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's good.
What's his name?
Denim.
Denim?
Yeah.
He's going to come with you wherever you get drafted, right?
He is, yeah. Got to get him chained up, but yeah, that's
cool. Oh, so he's still a crazy puppy right now?
Yeah, got to keep him in confined spaces right now a little bit, because if he's out, he's running around biting stuff. He's going crazy.
Is this your first dog?
On my own, yeah, but I had dogs growing up.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
I see. You're always a big animal guy?
Yeah, I would say so.
Just a dog guy?
Just dogs. I like going to the zoo maybe, but only dogs in the crib.
They got a nice zoo here in New York at the Bronx Zoo. I haven't been yet.
Yeah.
I heard it's amazing.
So I might have to tap in.
Well, what animal would you see at the zoo?
Monkeys probably. Sharks.
Sharks are cool. Right?
Yeah, I like sharks.
Or like the gorillas and all that. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. Sure.
No. I mean, the Bronx Zoo, Central Park Zoo, there's a lot of zoos here.
Yeah, I might have to tap in.
What do you like being here in New York City? Do you enjoy it?
Wait, one more time, do I like being here?
Yeah, do you like being in here in New York?
Yeah, I spent a ton of time here. Worked out with Chris Brickley a lot here. Got my chest tattoo. Like, I've been out here a lot, so super cool.
Yeah, I'm curious, Darren, with you, like, I think obviously a lot of talk this past year about the games you missed, the creatine stuff and all that like that. How much are you looking forward to getting back out on the court, even in summer league, like next month in July?
Yeah, super excited. Last time I got to play in a game was against St. John's in March, so definitely looking forward to it. And I've been working my butt off to get back to where I was, like the clips we watched. Like, I'm feeling like that guy again. So
I feel like there's more burst. Were you more explosive in high school?
For sure. Just with what I had going on, it kind of held me back. I think that kind of speaks to me because I was still effective still. So, but I'm back to that guy.
Well, you had the injury too, like, beside from the cramping and all that. What was the injury? Like a hip injury or something?
Hamstring. No hip.
Okay, just a hamstring injury.
That's hamstring strain. But that hasn't bothered me since.
And that can slow you down too.
Yeah, but that was dealt with. Like, that was nothing.
I mean, I feel like the thing, like, at Kansas, like, you average 20 despite this.
Yeah, right? No one talks about that. I don't know why, but it is what it is.
I mean, but, like, you were amazing off ball. Like, you looked like Ray Allen.
Yeah. That's how I kind of say, like, whatever position I go to, I can affect it either on or off it.
I think that adaptability is probably the most appealing quality about you, where you can be like a shapeshifter.
For sure.
Regardless of the situation, the environment, the opponent. Is that the way you sort of view yourself?
Yeah, I think that's a skill to be able to go adapt to your situation. Because, like, with the draft, I don't pick where I get to go. So, like, wherever I go, I got to still be effective, still be me.
Now, with your jumper, I'm curious. Like, obviously, you shot the hell out of it at Kansas. Mm-hmm. At the high school level, you were a bit more streaky.
Yeah.
Like, your free throw percentage was always 84%, 85%+. You were always elite from the line.
Yeah.
From the field, it was more inconsistent. What clicked at Kansas with your jumper that wasn't there necessarily at high school?
I think, like you said, I had to adapt to something new. I know I didn't have the same burst. So I had to figure out a way to still affect the game. That's just me being the competitor I am and wanting to be better. I knew shooting was something I had to be better at. And on top of me not being myself, I knew I had to be able to knock these shots down because I can't blow past guys like I was.
There was the video with you, AJ DiBonta, and Cameron Boozer. You guys are all pointing at each other for best aura, best shooter, best this and that. For best defender, you pointed at DiBonta. What are you talking about? You're the best defender of those three.
When I look back, you're definitely right. I guard better than him, but he got the intangibles, I feel like, to be a good defender too. So I just was showing love. But the scorer ones and stuff, I can't give them those up. You see me, I pointed at myself on those ones.
I mean, you're pointing at yourself for all those. For defense, you should have pointed at yourself.
I should, you're right.
Because, I mean, for potential-wise.
If I could go back, I would say me. I ain't gonna lie.
I mean, with your defense, I am curious, like, the playmaking ability that you have on that end of the floor, getting in passing lanes, deflections, and steals.
Yeah.
Is that something you always had since you were, like, a little kid playing in elementary school, or does that develop and learned?
Develop and learned. Because growing up, I wasn't really interested in defense, but like I said, growing up, I started to watch Kobe and stuff, and I seen how intentional he was about everything, and I kind of learned from that. It's one of my idols, so I wanted to be great on both sides of the ball.
Last thing for you, Darren. What do you love most about basketball?
It's hard to pick one thing. Really, I love everything about it. Probably the most is the process, like working out and getting better. Like training is what I love outside of the games and stuff, but like the consistent grind I enjoy the most.
That feeling of getting better.
For sure. And just being tired. Like Kobe said once, like, he's going to work to exhaustion. Like that kind of, like, I'm that kind of guy.
in some ways, do you feel like what happened last year at Kansas is sort of a blessing to now kind of like grow through that adversity?
For sure. I faced it. Got to grow from it, and can't wait to show everybody again.
Can't wait to see how your career unfolds. Darren, sure, thank you so much for joining me today, man. Thank you. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you, sir. Man.
All right, thank you to Darren Peterson for joining me. This draft class isn't just the top four, and that's it. There are consolation prizes. My next guest, Adai Mara from Michigan, as well as Keaton Wagler, guard from Illinois, are just some of the players you're going to see drafted in that 5 to 9 range that could potentially be one of the 2 or 3 best players in this year's draft class. It's going to be really interesting to see what happens, though, on draft night, because starting at number 5, the Clippers are not set in stone to pick there. There's so much talk around them potentially being a trade down team, even just trading down 2 spots with Sacramento, possibly even further as well, depending on how the board's shaken out and how they perceive what they could get lower at 9 or 10 or even number 12 with Oklahoma City. Number 6 with Brooklyn. It seems like they're probably a Michael Brown, Darius Acuff, Keaton Wagler team, one of the guards on the board. And then at 7, Sacramento, they want Darius Acuff, but there's a chance that we see the Kings trade down if Acuff goes 5 or 6. So there could be a lot of movement in this range, especially now with number 9, the Dallas Mavericks hiring Dusty May from the Michigan Wolverines, an unbelievable hire. May is one of the best basketball coaches in the world at any level, and now he's going to be coaching Cooper Flagg. Big upgrade for him, going from the NIL and all that madness in college, and now being in the NBA, getting the coach Cooper and whatever the Mavericks do with that 9th pick, and who knows? With 3 Michigan prospects on the board, Yaxel Lindenborg, Merez Johnson, and Adai Mara, maybe Dallas will take one of them. Maybe they'll trade down and take 2 of them, potentially. But let's go on to my next interview with Michigan center Adai Mara. Joining me now from the Michigan Wolverines, NCAA champion Adai Mara. How you doing?
Good, all good.
But it's not Mara. It's Mara. Is that the proper pronunciation?
Yeah, Adai Mara.
Adai Mara. Okay. We'll get that corrected for the NBA.
Okay.
No more Mara.
Adai
Mara.
Yeah.
Adai, the thing I love so much about your game is the passing ability that you have as a 7'3" guy, the flair, but also the reliability. Is that something that you've always had, that playmaking trait throughout your whole life?
Yeah, there's I always remind myself like making all these passes since I was a kid. But I always try to play with some fun, you know, so all this kind of behind the back passes over the head. So it's, for me, it's like fun when I do it. So it's great. I always try to do the same thing, but I would say it's my dad's fault that I have that, because with people that I talk with that play with my dad, they told me that he was a great passer too. And also when I was younger too, just practicing against the wall, like different passes and hit the same spot every time. So I guess it was like a mix with everything.
Your father, was he very tall too?
Yeah, he's like 6'7", 8".
Okay, I see. So you is there anybody who's over 7 feet like you?
No. In my family?
No. I see. Did you grow up playing point guard at all, or were you always like play a big man?
No, I was always big. I used to play outside when I was younger, so I used to dribble the ball a little bit, shoot, and play more like outside. I always wanted to be a point guard though. Like I always wanted to be like the guy who, like the general, and just saying it to everyone where it has to go, like what play to do. But yeah, I guess I can with the 7'3".
Well, I mean, I suppose though, at the same time, like in the NBA, you'll be running dribble handoffs and doing different things out there on the floor, right?
We'll see.
I mean, we'll see. I suppose at Michigan, you definitely have that versatility of doing different things out there.
Yeah. But not dribbling the ball. I think we all had this, like, very, I don't know, we were very focused on our role. We were just trying to be as better as we could as a players and teammates. So,
did the Dusty May decision today, him going to the Dallas Mavericks, shock you?
It did. Yeah, they told me right after I woke up, and I was surprised. But I'm also like happy. I think he's gonna be more than prepared to take that job. I said it like a couple of times before. Like he's just obsessed with basketball, so he's always learning. So he's gonna get there, and he's just gonna learn, adjust, and he's gonna do great. I'm happy for him.
Now I'm curious, if you have like amazing soft touch on floaters and hook shots, what needs to happen for it to translate to the free throw line and to 3-point range?
Just confidence, probably. Just as soon as I changed my mind, I knew the free throws, it was in my mind. I wasn't thinking the right way. I was thinking I'm going to miss instead of I'm going to make it. So when I changed that mid on the last part of the year, I started shooting 80-something%. So then that's more like me, you know. So it's going to be confidence. And also shooting threes is the same. It's the same. I know it's in my game, so I'm just going to practice it, obviously, and just being confident with my shot.
How would you describe your potential role moving forward in the NBA?
It's going to take a time, obviously, to adjust to the league. It's a big jump, but I'm excited to just get to work and just be the best player I can be. But if everything goes well, I see myself like doing really good in the league.
Did you expect to be a one and done when you first went to UCLA?
At that time, it was there, like the possibility was there. Then obviously the expectations that we had, we didn't accomplish those expectations. So obviously when we saw what was happening, we changed our mentality, but it was there. Yeah.
And what do you love most about basketball?
Probably just creating like new relationships, knowing new people and connecting with them. Like now with this year in Michigan, I'm going to have, I know players that they call them my brothers, and they're going to be there for my whole life. So that's the biggest thing for me.
And now head coach in the NBA as well. I mean, it's you, Jaxel Lindenborg, Marez Johnson, Burnett as well. Nobody talks about, but the 5-year vet. I mean, like you guys have a good class coming in.
And give them like some players, give them like 1 or 2 years and they will be there too. So. So I'm excited for this new team and the players that they had, because they're gonna be great.
Oh, for sure, no doubt about that. A lot of good talent going to Michigan this year, even without Dusty there. Fascinating to see what happens with Dallas. Adai, can't wait to see how your journey unfolds in the NBA. Thank you so much for joining me, man.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you. All right, joining me here from Illinois, potential top 5 pick in the 2026 NBA draft, Keaton Wagler. Keaton, how are you, man?
I'm doing great. Happy to be here.
I'm excited to have you, man. Tomorrow's the NBA draft. I'm curious to start off with you. How would you describe your game to somebody who's never seen your play before?
I definitely say, I'd say smooth, kind of just play at my own pace. Always wanting to make the right play, whether that's, you know, having the ball in my hands, creating for my teammates or getting my own shot, or just being ready to, you know, catch and shoot and attack off of closeouts.
Did you see yourself being a one of them?
Honestly, I didn't. Going in to the summer of my freshman year, I didn't really know what to expect. I was just going in with the mindset of just wanting to help the team win no matter, you know, what role I had. And I think just throughout that time, I just continued to prove to the coaches and my teammates that, you know, I can play at this level and belong on the court with anyone.
I'd imagine your 46-point game against Purdue was one of those moments in your life where you're like, wow, this is happening, I'm doing this.
Yeah, that game was definitely crazy. I definitely turned a lot of heads. I would say that just the amount of points I scored on the road at Purdue is just, I mean, first person to ever do that. So it's crazy.
Scored in such a variety of ways in that game, too. You would be, you know, off against slower players, quicker players, out of pick and roll, isolation, inside, outside. I feel like for you, that's probably, when you look back at your season, a preview of what you hope is to come in your future, right? With that versatility?
Yeah, definitely versatility. Being able to score at, you know, 3 levels, getting to the rim, finishing mid-range 2, and then, you know, obviously keeping the 3 ball just ready and keep shooting at a good percentage.
Were you really 5'8" as a freshman in high school?
I was 5'8".
5'8". So, like, when did you become 6 foot? When did you become 6'5"?
So,
what's the trajectory?
Going into... yeah, so freshman year I was 5'8", and then by the end of my sophomore year I was 6'3". So that was kind of just the biggest, you know, height, like growth spurt that I had. But I just continued to keep growing a little bit throughout the years, and And now I'm 6'6".
How'd your game change over that time?
I definitely, it changed. I think in high school, I became more of a point guard. Even though as I got taller, I started playing point guard my sophomore year for my team. And I think I just kept my shooting ability with me because when I was that short, I think the only thing I really did was shoot. And I kept that with me as I became, you know, more versatile, being able to be a point guard, you know, make plays and finish at the rim.
Last year at Illinois, you ran 578 pick and rolls and you generated 1.1 points per play, which is an elite mark last year, according to Synergy. So you were not a point guard as a freshman. You became more of a point guard. Is it still something that you're still learning how to do, you feel like?
I feel like you can always learn more, honestly. I feel like I am one of the best players at pick and roll in this draft class, but I think there's always still room to learn and different reads, you know, coming off it, different ways to manipulate how the defense is guarding it, whether if they're hedging or dropping or anything. So just continue to learn and read off of that.
You watching film to do that or like your own film, the point guards? How do you learn?
Mix of both. I would definitely say watch a lot of film of players in the NBA, especially I'd say Halliburton, just because he's in so many ball screens too. But also just learning myself just in workouts, just trying different things, different reads.
Have teams talked to you about your lack of dunks?
They have a little bit, yeah. I feel like most teams don't really like see it as a big problem because just the way I play, like it won't generate a lot of dunks, especially the way we played at Illinois too. We didn't cause a lot of steals and get in transition that much. But I think, I don't ever worry about it, and I don't think the NBA teams do either.
I don't think they do either, really. I mean, the people I talk to is the type of thing where, like, sure, it's nice if you're an Anthony Edwards athlete, but it's not a necessity to achieve stardom. Most of the top players in the league are top players based off feel and intelligence and quick decision-making. It's like an athleticism of the mind, right? Is that where you feel like you're more in the, like, the 99th percentile, maybe not as a leaper, but in your mind you are?
I think, yeah, definitely. I think my IQ is definitely super high. I have super high basketball IQ. I can – you know, read the game differently than most people. And that's a big thing that teams like about me is how smart I am.
That said, I am curious when it comes to driving to the basket, what do you perceive as your greatest area for improvement when you do drive to the rim?
I definitely say just like my touch around the rim, just being able to find different ways to finish, especially the floater, has been a big thing that I've been working on. But I already think that I'm good at, you know, making reads at the rim, whether it's, you know, dumping it off or finishing. But yeah, just continue to, you know, play through contact down there and be able to finish.
You went left 70% of the time on your drives to the basket, according to Synergy. Has there been work being done to improve going right at all in your training?
I think I'm good going both ways, but I think the way that I was guarded at Illinois, most people force me left, like teams would weak me, so force me to my left. And I think I just took advantage of that. That is actually a crazy stat I didn't know. I thought it was more probably 50-50, but I think I definitely do like going to left more when I go to the basket, but I'm comfortable going both ways.
Now, the teams looking at you, it seems like Clippers 5, Nets 6, Kings 7, 8 Hawks. That's your general range, it seems like. And then 9 Dallas as well, potentially probably more like your floor. With these types of teams, how much time have you spent looking at their rosters, imagining yourself in their organizations, or are you just kind of like wherever I go, and I'm not even thinking about it? What's your mindset?
Yeah, I think I paid attention a little bit, but I mean, like you said, I haven't really like thought about it too much because, you know, nothing's set in stone. So I think whatever team drafts me, you know, then I'll know like where I'll fit in, what position they'll have me play, and what I can do to, you know, help the team win in any way. So I'm just excited for that to know where I'm going to go.
How much did you watch the NBA playoffs?
I watched a lot of it.
Like every night, basically?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what were your takeaways from the postseason?
Definitely the physicality and the speed. It was just a lot different, just how fast certain teams played and just how physical each game was, especially the Spurs and OKC series was super physical. just shows how tough you have to be to play in those games and in those environments and to stay composed throughout it.
What's your end game for weight? Like, what do you need to reach when you're in your peak physically?
I think hopefully around maybe 210 would be good for me. I think I'd have to see what the team, trainer wants and see what that, I think for me just right now, to just continue just to put on as much weight as I can.
One of the thoughts that I've had conversations with about defense, especially for guards, even if you are a quote unquote elite defender, there's no stopping the game's best scorers. So one of the thoughts that a handful of executives have passed to me is that all that really matters is a guy putting an effort and trying and being where he's supposed to be and hustling and being physical. What do you think about kind of that general thought when it comes to the importance of just straight up hustle more than anything else on the defensive end?
Yeah, I think that honestly is how I've kind of viewed defense, because I've always thought that, the best defenders are the one who try the hardest and want to play defense. Some people don't want to go out there and guard, but I think if you put your mind to it and you just try your best, good things will happen. You'll become a better defender. Like you said, though, players in the NBA are going to make tough shots and, people are going to have nights where, they seem like they can't miss. But just got to stay with it and just want to try and get better at it.
That's what I look at with Brunson. He's 6 foot, he's probably more 215, 220, but he's bumping Wemby on rolls to the rim, hustling off ball. He's a quote unquote, targeted defender, but the Knicks survived. They won the finals in 5 games. So I think part of it, I think for you, that's probably going to be putting on weight over time, but always effort. That's the thing nobody has any questions about you is your mind and your effort level.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm curious with you, what's your biggest motivator, Keaton?
I probably just say biggest motivator, probably just, my family. Just, they've helped me get to this point, and being able to give back to them by playing the game that I love is something that motivates me each day to get up and want to get better. And I think also just, me personally, I'm just one of the biggest, one of the most competitive person. And I want to win everything and I want to be the best at everything. So I just take that with me and use it to want to get better each day. Even on days where, I don't really feel like it, but you just have to do it.
When you were 5'8" as a freshman, did you have the dream of being here?
I did. Yeah. I've always had that dream ever since I was little.
Did you at one point think I'll be like a Nate Robinson point guard?
I don't know what I was thinking. I was like, I wonder if I'm going to hit my growth spurt because I feel like my whole family is tall.
Really?
Yeah. So
mom and dad both?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mom's 5'11" and then my dad's 6'4". Wow. So, I was hoping to, I didn't think I was going to get this tall, but I was hoping for at least 6'3". So it worked out.
So do you talk to any doctors? Is there a chance you get even taller from here or are you done?
I hope so. I hope I'm still growing. I don't know though.
Be 6'8" in a few years.
Yeah,
right?
that'd be awesome. 6'8".
What do you do besides basketball?
Honestly, in my free time, I probably say the most thing I do is just play video games. But
what games?
Right now, Rainbow Six Siege, 2K, Call of Duty. Those are the main ones. But
Warzone and Call of Duty. I see. How do you feel about the state of the game right now?
I feel like it could be better.
A lot of cheaters right now.
It's so terrible. Bad. But it's not what I play most of the time right now. So I don't get as mad about it, but I think outside of video games, I like to just be outside. And a couple of days ago I was fishing. I just like to just be outside and be active really.
Fishing. Oh, so that's a lot different than getting mad playing video games.
Yeah.
Total opposite. Mm-hmm. What do you love most about basketball?
I definitely just say the competitive spirit that the game has. Everyone, I think it's a really good community where you get to meet a lot of really good people, and be around them, and just learn a bunch of different things in life and just make new connections is the coolest part about it. Not even just the basketball piece itself, but just all the connections it brings. Oh, you.
Keaton, I'm rooting for you. Can't wait to see what happens on draft night. Enjoy this whole process, man. Thank you for joining me today.
Yep. Thank you.
All right. Thank you to Adai Mara and Keaton Walker for joining me on this episode. We got some more guards to talk about here, because the funny thing is with this draft class is it's in part defined by the amount of guards. In the top 10, we talked a little bit earlier about Acuff and Burries and Wogler and all these guys that are going to be drafted in the top 10. Kingston Fleming's potentially as well. Michael Brown. But then after that, in that 11 to 20 range, you got Christian Anderson, Bennett Sturts, Abuka Okori, LeBaron Filon. There's a lot of guys, even in the second round, there's a lot of good quality guards that are going to be selected. And I'm going to be talking to Braden Burries and Christian Anderson coming up about their future in the NBA. But it's going to be interesting to see where these guards actually land, because if it's the Heat or Bucks at 13, they're a potential spot for guards. I think the Bulls at 15, assuming they take Caleb Wilson with the fourth pick in the draft, they could be a spot for guards. At 16, the Grizzlies have worked out a ton of different guards. 17, the Thunder. Teams could trade into that slot, potentially trying to jump ahead of a team take at 19 or 20 or 21 to get the best guard available on the board. So it's usually there's a lot of talk every year about potential movement. But this year in particular, I think because of the clear-cut tiers of certain groups of players, and this year with the guards, there's a clear group in the top 10, and then there's another group that's going to end around 20 to 25. So who's going to take those guards? Let's hear from two of them, Braden Burries and Christian Anderson. Joining me now from Arizona, potential top 10 pick in the 2026 NBA draft, Braden Burries.
Sir.
Braden, how you doing, man?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing excellent, man. Appreciate you joining me today, man. I'm curious. I think with your game, you clearly can do different things. You can run point. You can play off ball. You can do the dirty work. You can dive for a loose ball, set a screen. I feel like you kind of can do a little bit of everything. How do you envision your own game, though, when it comes to moving forward in the NBA?
I envision myself as just like a complete basketball player, someone who can pretty much do it all, you know, guard multiple positions, you know. Impact winning outside of just scoring. So, like, that's the main thing with me.
Impacting winning.
Yeah.
What are the ways that you saw players impact winning in the playoffs this year?
Just playing hard, you know, sacrificing, you know, good shots for greater shots, you know, like you said, diving on loose balls, timely rebounds, you know, stuff like that. And then even like the vets on the bench that's not playing, you know, being great leaders, you know, for guys that's coming in. So all that stuff matters at the end of the day.
I mean, I feel like when it comes to guard play in the NBA, sometimes there's literally nothing you can do about opposing scorers in the league. Like, you can be the best defender in the world and it's not going to matter sometimes. So, like, what matters most on defense, at least in my opinion, is just effort, playing hard. And that's it. Do you think that's fair to say as somebody who's out there in the trenches doing it?
Yeah, that's the main thing. Just, you know, give maximum effort and then kind of just live with the results. You know, if they make a tough shot, that's a good shot. You got to make them shoot it again. But if you just out there and if you get consistently blown by, then like that's like inexcusable.
Now, oh, that's for sure. Exactly. Now, I'm curious with you, like, was this type of approach, this hustle approach, this gritty approach that you have always something you had ever since you were a little kid?
Yeah, it kind of like just installed in me, like from where I'm from, San Bernardino, just like always playing hard, you know, and just enjoying the moment. But like, anytime you go on the court, whether that's basketball, football, any field that you're in, you always want to give maximum effort and try to be the best version of yourself.
Now, you said where you're from. What does that mean? Like, how is it instilled in you?
Just like kind of just getting overlooked, you know, because we're like outside of LA. LA always gets like the main attention. And then I'm from the IE, San Bernardino. So kind of just like anytime you go on the court, just trying to like prove myself and prove why I should be where I'm at.
Now, with you, is your family of basketball players, or where'd the game kind of find you?
My pops played basketball, Cal State San Bernardino. He went overseas for 13 years. He was in the Hall of Fame there. And my mom played Tennessee softball, and then she went to Cal State San Bernardino and played basketball.
I see. So a family of athletes.
Yeah. My brother hooped at Arizona high school. He was the all-time leading scorer for points. So my uncle's hooped, all that.
Growing up, were you a Lakers fan?
Nah, I grew up like a Bulls fan. You know, my dad from St. Louis, and then he moved over to San Bernardino. But I kind of just followed whatever teams he liked. And then as I got older, kind of just watched the game as a Bystander.
What was your football team?
Dolphins.
Dolphins.
I'm still Dolphins. A Dolphins fan. Oh, wow. Every day. If Dolphins see this.
Is that?
We're going to win a Super Bowl within the next 5 years.
I grew up a Patriots fan, so you might just want to walk off the podcast now.
Yeah. No, y'all had a good run. Y'all had a good run.
Yeah, I mean, it's still kind of going. We were just in the Super Bowl this year again.
Yeah. That is true.
Know. Yeah, I mean, I don't know about your Dolphins, but we'll see. Who knows?
We had one good year, 2023.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's crazy, man. Patriots, Dolphins, when you were just a baby, you used to have some real good battles.
Yeah.
Those teams, Jason Taylor, since you probably don't even.
Yeah, another D-line. I know a good amount about football.
You know, Jason Taylor is the brother of Joy Taylor. Joy Taylor, yeah, they're related.
That's fire.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay, that's a little fun fact for you. I'm curious, growing up a Bulls fan, was there anybody you modeled your game after from that team or anybody in the league in general that you really liked as a kid?
I want to say modeled, but like I really like Derrick Rose, you know, really watching him play, how he was a leader for his team. And like you can see like guys like playing with him because who he was as a character and as a person outside of basketball. And then like just watching them as a team, like Kirk Heinrich and Joakim Noah, all those guys, Boozer, Dane, like the way they just played the game, you know, just looked like so effortless.
How about today in the NBA? Are there any players that you sort of envision yourself playing like in the NBA?
I'll say like Jamal Murray, Devin Booker, like guards who can get to their spots, simple, limited dribbles, you know, impact winning, you know, and they put their teammates in positions to be successful.
I think the Jamal Murray comparison is a good one, and like in terms of how you can play, because it speaks to what we hit on earlier.
Yeah,
the ability to do literally anything. Like you can play with the ball, you can play without the ball. You can. Jamal Murray's a screener sometimes for Jokic. You know, like there's just different things that you can do. For you, does it matter to get drafted high?
No, it doesn't matter at all. I really just want to go somewhere where it's the best fit for me. You know, where I can just be me, play through mistakes. You know, get the experience and just impact winning and have a great chance to make it to the finals and win.
There's been some talk about you limiting workouts, trying to steer your way to certain teams.
Yeah.
What has been the thought process behind limiting some of the workouts?
My thought process has just been like, you know, agents with Rich Paul and Lucas, you know, just trusting them. You know, I trust them. So whatever they feel like is best for me, I just kind of like accept it. And then just go from there, honestly.
I mean, they've been very good at that over the years. I know with like Derek Lively, they steered him towards Dallas to be the lob guy with Luka. Obviously, Luka got traded to the Lakers, but I mean, the intent was there. And I think for you, it's probably a similar mindset, like where to go is the best spot for Braden Burries to get to a finals, as you just said. Is that ultimately really just the goal about winning more than anything else for you?
Yeah, that's the main thing, you know, whether you play on a good team or bad team, like you want to just be on a winning team. Like that's the decider factor where if you're having fun or if you're got to like not have as much fun.
If you're miserable. You're making a lot of money, but you're miserable.
Yeah, like that's not a good feeling to have. Like, I mean, you're making money, but like you're losing. It's like then you got people talking to you every 5 seconds about how your team this or that. So you just want to be on a winning team for sure.
Is that part of the reason why you went to Arizona?
Yeah, no, definitely. Play with Arizona, I was able to play, you know, be able to show I could play on and off the ball. And I was able to show that I could play with other great players like Koa Pete, you know, Jaden Bradley, you know, Mo,
Yvonne,
Tobey Walker. Yeah. Like, the list goes on for sure. And then also playing with a great coach, Coach Lloyd.
What do you love most about basketball?
What I love most? It's a lot. I mean, if I had to, I love everything, for real. If I had to pick one thing, it would probably just be like the journey, honestly, of just, or like, either competing in a close game with my teammates or the journey with the ups and downs, you know, just the workouts and stuff like that.
The feeling of getting better, that thing?
Yeah, that's like a crazy feeling for sure. Like you work out, you don't feel like yourself getting better day by day, but then you look like a month ago or like 2-3 months ago, years, you're like, oh, dang, like, I'm getting better over
time. It's like in the middle of it, you don't really feel the trajectory going up, but then you zoom out and it's like, oh my God, I used to suck.
No, definitely, for sure. So you had a journey, for sure. The process of just getting better and like wanting to be the best version of yourself is fire.
In 5 years, where do you envision yourself? Are you an all-star champion? What do you see yourself?
5 years, I can see myself as being one of the better players in the league, being someone who's a multiple-time all-star. Being like just probably like finals run, you know, winning the finals and like
you never know. A lot can happen in 5 years.
A lot can happen in 5 years. That's for sure. Braden, excited to see how your journey unfolds. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm rooting for you, man. Thank you.
No, thank you for having me.
All right. Joining me now, Christian Anderson. Christian, how are you, man?
Doing great.
So entering college, you were the 101st ranked recruit. What's different then compared to now as you're on the doorstep of the NBA?
I think, obviously it's, you know, the NBA. So, just coming in and being like one of the guys on the, you know, higher end is something that is definitely new. But then again, I always feel like I'm always been overlooked, like every single place. And so I think for me, I think I'm the best player in the draft. And I think everybody would probably say that about themselves. But for me, I believe it. And so in that aspect, I still feel overlooked. So.
Now, I think that's a good way to look at it, because like, even if you go, I don't know, 15, 16, 17 or whatever, that means there's still 10-plus guys going ahead of you.
Exactly.
Now, I think for you, when people hear, like any player say, I feel like I'm the best player in the draft, there's some people listening to this podcast who aren't familiar with your game. Exactly. They didn't watch college basketball. How would you describe your game to somebody who has never watched Christian Anderson?
I think just a dynamic playmaker, like offensively, being able to score the ball as well as I pass the ball and facilitate, I think that's like second to nobody in this draft. And, you know, my ability to shoot off the dribble, catch and shoot, and also just read. And I've seen every single defense, like, so being able to just be that playmaker at the point guard position, but also have the versatility to play off ball too. I think that's the type of player I am.
I mean, I think your versatility is the biggest thing. Like, that's clearly appealing about you, because every guard in today's league, they're not Chris Paul. They're not the ball in their possession every single play.
Exactly.
They have to play off ball.
Yeah.
And like, you're a dynamic off ball shooter.
Exactly.
You might even be the best shooter in the draft.
Yeah.
Even though you're an on ball guy.
Exactly. And like you said, on the ball, like, I was able to play on the ball this year and show my capability on the ball, but off the ball, like, I'm just as good. So, like you said, being that dynamic type of shooter and being able to, you know, be plug and play, basically, I feel like that's one of my biggest strengths. So.
Now, one of the things you didn't mention about yourself that stands out to me is your rebounding as a guard. You averaged 4 per game. You had a game with 11 against Cincinnati.
Multiple.
I mean, like, you've had a lot of high rebound games. Is that ability to read that you're talking about part of the reason why you're such a good rebounder as a guard?
Yeah. Just being able to, you know, read the game, and because my dad played overseas and I've always played against pros, played up, and my ability to read the game, I feel like I've always had that. And because I've been around it, I've played it for a very long time. So being able to know, like, where the ball is going to bounce is a part of it. And like I said, like, I can do anything somebody asks me to do. So if it's get 11 rebounds, get 11 assists, or get 30 points, like, I feel like I can do it all. So
how about defensively? Obviously, like, you're not a 6'8 wing or something like that. You are a guard.
Yeah.
And guards tend to get attacked.
Exactly. But
what did you see in the playoffs in terms of like a Jalen Brunson? Mm-hmm. What did he do to survive defensively that you'll need to do in the NBA?
Yeah. I mean, just have the will to defend, like, want to do it. And obviously give some resistance. You got to be physical. You got to know everybody's weakness and strength. So playing the scouting report, and just being in the right positions, I think is all part of it. And I feel like for me, I got the right physicals. Like, I might be, 6'3" with shoes, 6'1½" without, but I think like my wingspan is 6'7" almost. And so I think I got the right tools to do it. But like you said, like, being able to not get picked is something you have to do. And I feel like just the will to do it and the fight and the competitiveness you have to have is something I have. So I feel like that's something I'm going to keep getting better at as I go on in the league. So
I think that matters more than anything else. Like you could be the best defensive guard in the NBA and like you can do nothing. Like it doesn't matter sometimes what you do against the great scorers, for as you know, right?
For sure.
Going against great defenders, sometimes there's nothing they can do to stop you, right?
Better offense is better than better defense.
100%. So at the college level, you ran a lot of ball screens. Yep. And one of the nitpicks people have about you is creation without a screen.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you've worked to improve at, working without a screen in pre-draft?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like the way our offense was designed, like screens was a big part of it. And I felt like we did that like every single play. And it's not that I have to have a screen. That's just how our team ran our offense. And I was best in the screen. So we used that to our advantage, especially with having JT. So I became heavily reliant on the screen. But I've always been like a one-on-one player, one-on-one scorer, like, in one-on-ones, like I'm always like I rarely lose in one-on-ones. So I felt like just because that was like the game plan doesn't mean I can't do it. And it might have been like I accustomed myself to have ball screen. And as you know, like if you don't do something for a long time, it's kind of hard to just snap back right to it. But I felt like I've always been a great one-on-one player. And without screens, so I'm not worried about that at all.
Does it matter? Do you get that to get drafted high?
To, I mean, that people don't know it, yes, but in my opinion, like I said, like being overlooked is something that people always make the mistake on for me. Did it in college, did it high school, AU, wherever. So if they want to say that's my knock and not draft me high because of it, I feel like it's up to them. So
what are people missing?
I mean, defense, like everybody says my defense, but I mean, guard wise, I would say like, I'm definitely not the worst defensive player in this draft. Definitely one of the better shooters.
Where's Darius Akef? Sorry.
We don't talk about him, but,
not I love Akef. He's a brilliant offensive player.
Not pertaining to him, but like, I'm just saying, like, even excluding him, like, I feel like if I really, like, because I was never really asked to play defense like that for real. I played 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. I was always asked to stay on the court, guard the worst player. Yeah, that's the reality of it. So I feel like if I'm asked to kind of be that defender, my 5-on-5 defense is really good. I feel like if I'm asked to do that specific thing, so I guess defense is something people really think I'm really trash on, but I feel like as I've gotten the teams and work out for them, they realize I'm nearly not as bad as they thought.
I feel like you've been really good at workouts on defense.
Yeah, exactly. And my one-on-one, I've been winning my one-on-ones in workouts too. So if, like you said, my burst, that's, I feel like that's a pretty dumb reason, but it's whatever. So,
is there any music you like that would surprise some people?
Music? I mean, I think it's recency bias because of the Michael Jackson movie, but I've been bumping some Michael Jackson.
Oh, they have a MJ Broadway play here in New York?
Man, I mean, they got everything in New York.
That's true. There's something for everybody.
They got Michael Jackson himself here, so. No, they got everything in New York, so. But no, Michael Jackson is, like, as I really started, like, hearing the music a little bit more, like, he's really one of ones.
You're doing, like, the deep cuts, not even just, like, Thriller and all that? Yeah.
Yeah, like, whatever. I mean, obviously the most popular ones. I'm, like, listening to Michael Jackson probably, like, 5% out of whatever I listen to. So it's not that much, but if I had to pick him.
What do you do besides basketball?
Draw. Hang with friends and family, like get on the game, get on FaceTime, whatever. Like I like to interact with people, so that for real.
So just hanging.
Yeah.
Games, movies, anything like that.
Games, movies. Mm-hmm. I can't watch a movie by myself though. It would have to be with somebody. But yeah, games. Or if I'm doing something by myself, it's drawing. So.
And last question for you, Christian. What do you love most about basketball?
I think the competitive aspect of it, like the will to be the best, is like something that drives me, like trying to out
out-compete people and be better than somebody. Like especially, like, for example, like, you beat somebody one-on-one, you get that kind of thrill of being better than somebody. It's the same thing in, like, 5-on-5, winning games and winning championships and just beating people. I feel like the competitive aspect of basketball is, like, the best thing about it for me.
Christian, I can't wait to see how your career unfolds. Thank you so much for joining me today, man. Rooting for you.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me.
All right, there's a lot of talk every year about sleepers in the first round. Who are going to be the guys that are stolen with the 15th pick, the 21st pick? Who's the guy that exceeds expectations? I think a lot of the times people talk about Merez Johnson out of Michigan, Yaxel Lendenborg, his teammate, Nate Amen, very raw prospect out of Tennessee. But then, like, some of the names that get overlooked are Kareem Lopez, playing out of Australia this year. I had him on my podcast. Big, thick, 6'8" frame. He's the type of guy that I think could be a steal. Chris Sinak out of Houston, Koa Pete, Sergio De La Rea. There's a lot of guys at the guard and forward spot that could become steals. Jaden Quaintance played 28 games in college, has a major knee injury, might not even be able to play his rookie year in the NBA. That's why he's falling down boards. But guys like that become steals. I've got two guys on the podcast today. Dalen Swain out of Texas, who's a 6'7", rangy, versatile wing player. And then Alan Graves, a freshman from Santa Clara, came off the bench. Didn't even start last year, and yet he's a potential top 20 pick, maybe even a potential lottery pick this year. But he's the type of guy that could be easily a steal when we look back 5 to 10 years from now in the draft. So up next, we have Dalen Swain. But first, let's go to Alan Graves. Joining me now from Santa Clara, potential top 20 pick in the 2026 draft, Alan Graves. Alan, how are you?
I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm doing great today, man. I have to start off asking you about this.
Okay.
Tell me about the time you got sucker punched during a game.
First question. Here we go. Let's start it off. Dunked on him. Came down the court, fast break, got the dunk. And then, you know, I was yelling. People think I said something. I didn't say anything. Yelling and then running back to my side of the court. And then, you know, he didn't like that and got punched right here. And I'm just glad my teammate held me back. That's the only thing I'm thankful for.
What was your reaction in the moment? Were you, like, shocked that it actually happened?
I was definitely shocked because as soon as it happened, I, like, stunned it this way. And I was like, well, he really punched me. And then I tried to go and then my teammate grabbed me and – Yeah, it was.
Was there any, like, friction entering that moment, like, before that in the game?
Oh, yeah, it was one moment. I set a screen, and he kind of, like, just pushed me, and I pointed at the middle of the game, and I was like, you better stop doing that. And then,
Chance Trujillo, I think that's true. Yeah, he would fit right in with the playoffs and all the punching and pushing and sticking, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And you as well, Will, with your intensity, the toughness with which you play, with willingness to take a charge, dive for loose balls. Have you always been wired this way?
Yes, sir. That's definitely how I've played the game my whole life, just growing up, making the winning plays. That's what I pride myself on. I always want to win at whatever I'm doing, so just making sure I'm doing the things that cause that.
Was that, like, learned behaviors or someone, like, you had a parent or teacher or coach that put that in you, or were you just, like, wired that way from birth?
I feel like it's credit to my dad. He raised me, my brother, and my sister. My brother played at LSU, sister played at Auburn. So he obviously knew something about the game of basketball and taught us all everything that we know. And just really growing up, I feel like my toughness and why I play that way is how I grew up, just raised to work hard and not even in basketball, but grew up being a mechanic, working in the shop with him. So just having that working mindset was definitely, it translated over to basketball.
You grew up playing point guard and your family had a lot of point guards in it too, right?
Yep. Yes, sir. Grew up playing point guard. My family said we don't raise big. So, and I didn't hit my growth spurt till like freshman year, summer. I was never like the biggest. I was always bigger, but never like super tall.
What were you as a freshman? How tall?
Maybe like 6 foot.
Okay.
But I was tall, but I just wasn't super tall. And I grew to 6'7" my sophomore year. So, growing up, I always trained to be a point guard. Had those skills.
You didn't become a big, you're a more forward type, right? So, exactly. So your family stayed true to that. They don't raise bigs, they raise forwards.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I mean, I'm curious with you, man. Like, I think you were kind of an unexpected one and done to a lot of people. I mean, you came off the bench last year. You were a sixth man for Santa Clara, and yet you're here in the draft. There's people who are just tagging along, starting to follow the draft this week because the draft is on Tuesday. How would you describe yourself to those people? Give like a scouting report to the people who know nothing about Allen Graves.
Okay. I say that, like we talked about earlier, just really hardworking player. I'm going to do whatever it takes to win, whether that be dive on the floor for a loose ball, take a charge, get the offensive rebound. I pride myself on rebounding, winning a possession battle on defensively, steals, deflections, things like that. And then offensively, just being capable to do a little bit of everything, dribble, put the ball on the floor, attack closeouts, make the right reads, don't turn the ball over. And then, you know, my shooting, just being able to shoot the ball and stretch the floor.
You had 67 steals and 33 blocks last season. You shot over 40% from three, and like basically every draft analytics model, you're like a top 5 to 10 guy. Do you care about numbers yourself at all? Or?
Not really. I just want to win. And that was my main goal last year, was I just wanted to win the game at the end of the day, whatever I had to do, whether that was getting the steals, whether that was getting the blocks, shooting the ball, just whatever I got to do in order to win the game.
I think that's the funny thing about your game is like you are high on like analytics driven boards, but you also pass the eye test with, like you said, the toughness, the grit, the mentality, the hustle. So it's like, I think with you, that's what makes you such a fascinating prospect. You clearly have like raw efficiency. You clearly are impactful defensively. You hustle, you play hard, but you came off the bench. You played at Santa Clara. Not a lot of experience against top level of competition. What have your conversations with teams been like when it comes to addressing that aspect with your readiness for the league?
I mean, I feel like the NBA does a great job of just really, you know, doing their research, really knowing the player before I even get into the, you know, offices with them. And they definitely did a great job scouting and just knowing who I was as a player, who I was as a person before I even stepped in on the court and worked out in front of them. They were big on that and just already knew who I was. And I feel like that was the biggest part.
Now, I've talked to a few different teams and I've said, like, why did Graves decide to enter the league? And I've heard a couple different things people have said. I'm curious, how would you put that in your own words? Why did you decide to stay in the draft?
My faith in God. That was the biggest thing. Just trusting in him, trusting in his plan for my life, trusting in his path, and just knowing that this was my purpose and this is where he's leading me. Other than that, I mean, obviously you have all the temptations going back to college, NIL, everything like that. But for me, it was just, I knew that this was where I wanted to be and this was my goal from the beginning.
I think the impression I got from talking to people is that, like, for you, it was like you just want to be in the league, just straight up.
Yeah, exactly.
That was, like, college was the path to the league.
Yep.
And exactly. How long have you had that dream?
Since a kid. I mean, every kid grows up, I want to be in the NBA. So just really having that dream since a kid and then being able to pursue it this year, I didn't want to waste that opportunity.
I was talking to somebody earlier who said growing up, like sometimes where you played, if you missed a shot, there'd be an alligator waiting there for the rebound. Is that true?
Yeah, that is very true. We have a camp on the river and in Manshack, and if you miss the shot, that ball goes in the water. There's probably a gator there waiting on you to jump in and get it.
No outlet passes from the alligators, no?
No outlet passes, not, unless you want to lose a hand, lose something like that. But most of the time, they wouldn't mess with you, so you'd be fine.
You ever go in there for a ball with a gator in there?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that scary?
I mean, yeah.
It's growing up like in the Northeast. We don't have those there.
The gator won't mess with you unless you buy a baby, its baby or something.
Okay. I see. But how do you know if there's a baby gator in there?
You just got to pray.
Well, that's a lot of faith in God there, right?
There you go.
I mean, I'm curious. Like, so can you tell me a little bit about like what was like where you grew up? You mentioned family. Well, you were a mechanic at one point. Mm-hmm. Growing up, you're shooting a ball. There's a gator there, you know. Tell me a little bit about where you're from.
Ponchatoula, Louisiana. Most people don't know where it's at. We're right in the middle of Baton Rouge, New Orleans. That's what I say to everybody. We're 45 minutes from both. And smaller town, maybe like 7,000, 8,000 people in it. Like everybody knows everybody town. Really, really big community. And as far as like everybody is just supportive, very supportive of each other. I've gotten so many texts throughout this whole process of congratulations and just we're so proud of you. Can't wait to see you again. And just really being able to grow up there and just that community feel is something I'll never forget in why I am the man I am today. And got a little bit of everything. Got working as a mechanic, going to the swamp, skiing on the river. You get a little bit of everything in Louisiana.
What's it like being here in New York City, the total opposite?
Yeah, it's definitely crazy just being in a big city. Coming from a small town, it was kind of shell-shocked, but you know, with the workouts, I've been in a couple big cities, so not too new, but definitely been an adjustment.
You mentioned your family, like family of point guards. When was the ball first in your hands?
Since a baby. I think I played my first game at 4 or 5. Biddy ball league, punch tool rec league. But ball's always been in my hands, just whether I was at the park, whether I was outside playing 1-on-1, 2-on-2, 3-on-3, it didn't matter. We was just always had a basketball in our hands.
What's one flaw people get wrong about you?
One flaw people get wrong. Let's see. My athleticism. I'm athletic.
You're going to be dunking on more people?
Yeah.
More sucker – no sucker punches. Just sucker punches. More posters.
Yep.
Yeah, we'll forget the sucker punches.
Yep.
Well, Alan, thank you so much for joining me, man. Best of luck with this whole process. Enjoy it all, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, now joining me, first round pick of the 2026 NBA Draft, Alan Swain. How you doing, man?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. So I think with your game, you spent 3 years in college, 2 years at Xavier, then with Texas. The thing that blows me away with you, you took half your shots at the rim this past season with Texas. Was getting to the basket always something you did ever since you were a little kid playing basketball for the first time?
Honestly, I think it's the complete opposite, to be honest. I was always, growing up, I was like a sharp shooter, to be honest. I was shooting, if I did get close to the basket, it was a floater. I was no contact, shying away from the contact. And then once I hit that growth spurt, you know, and playing in Columbus City League and growing up, I think I got more used to getting downhill. So
you were a sharpshooter. Yeah. That surprised some people. Yeah. That surprises me.
Yeah, for sure.
What happened?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I just got, getting to the rim was easy. You know what I mean? I just never had to shoot in high school and stuff like that, besides like AAU and stuff, but I could always get to the rim, get downhill. So
now I'm curious, when it comes to the shooting ability, you are a 80%+ guy from the free throw line, 50% guy on floaters, but from the perimeter and from 3-point range, you haven't had as much success as shooting the ball. Has that been a real focus of your training to improve the jumper?
Yeah, for sure. I think, I mean, like I talked about, I've been a good shooter since I was a kid. So it's just like, for me, reps, confidence, being able to get it off quicker. But like I said, my game was always, you know, getting downhill, asserting myself in the paint, getting paint touches, getting to the free throw line. So, but I think, and the shooting, especially the way the NBA is now, it's like super important. But I think I've made progress every single year. I'll continue to do that and be able to show that at the next level. And like you said, surprise a lot of people, I guess. So.
I mean, I think if you do become a knockdown shooter like you were when you were a kid, you could easily be one of the great steals in the draft, because you have everything else. You have the downhill attacking. You're a willing passer. You're 6'7". You have length and versatility defensively, toughness. Like, you have literally every other quality that teams are looking for. It's just they want to see you prove it as a shooter.
For sure.
You see yourself that way, too, as a guy people are overlooking?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of just an added chip on my shoulder. I think I appreciate people, you know, kind of sleeping on me, if that's what you want to call it. Because like you said, once they see it all work out, I'll be one of the guys that they wish went higher in the draft. So
your role at Xavier to your role at Texas, how would you describe the differences in the way you played at each school, and also what you were instructed to do differently?
So my freshman year was just about trying to impact the game any ways that I could, mm-hmm. just to stay on the court, just to have opportunity. So it was like guarding the best players sometimes, getting deflections, getting offensive rebounds, creating extra possessions, and kind of thriving in transition when I could, finishing plays, being a good cutter. And then with that, the success in that role kind of came more on-ball reps my sophomore year. I mean, with me developing, getting better on the ball, improving my handle, improving my scoring overall, I just got better at scoring on my own, not necessarily being more like a complimentary player. I think that was kind of my thing at Xavier. And then at Texas, I've made a leap every year, and I was kind of counting on making another leap. And it was just more like being the guy, being a primary ball handler, initiating the offense, getting everybody else involved. And it just was a product of my hard work every summer and throughout the season, just getting better.
I mean, at Texas, you became one of the most efficient isolation scorers in the entire nation, one of the most efficient on Synergy Sports ever. And that's with like primarily getting to the basket. ISO scoring, you talked about how when you were younger, you used to be more of a sharpshooter, a guy who avoided contact at the rim when you were super young. At Texas, what worked for you last year? Was that something you were building towards, like waiting for that opportunity to be an isolation scorer? And is that how you see yourself moving forward in the NBA too?
I wouldn't say necessarily like waiting for that opportunity. I think that's just kind of what happened, what I grew into. It was just trying to impact the game, be as impactful as I can, however that is. And I think that's just, you know, kind of how it happened. But at the next level, I just want to, like I said, impact however I need to be. I you know, there's only certain guys who are going to come in and have those ISO opportunities. But I think going back, if you watch what I did at Xavier, I can impact the game off the ball as well. I think I'm a really good cutter. I have a feel for the game. Being able to finish possessions, being able to get in there and grab offensive rebounds. And I'm always going to thrive in transition. I'm a good defensive rebounder, so I make, you know, the right plays, bringing the ball up the floor. So I think however I need to impact, I will.
I mean, I think one of the misconceptions about you, at least in my opinion, is like you at Texas, your role is you had to score, you had to finish a lot of possessions. At Xavier, you saw some of that more quick decision, decisive playmaking ability that's going to be of the utmost importance in the NBA. Like, you see the way it was in the playoffs, like, got to make instant decisions, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. I mean, I've talked about that with Coach Miller since my freshman year. We call them, you know, 0.5 decisions. When you get it, you have, you know, half a second to either shoot, to drive, to make one more pass. So I think learning a lot of that from him, a lot of film, that will help me thrive at the next level with those type of decisions.
You mentioned your rebounding and your defensive playmaking. I think those are some of your best qualities moving forward in the NBA. What stood out to you about this postseason, and how do you see yourself fitting in on the defensive end of the floor?
I think, like you said, I can make plays on the defensive end. Like I talked about, my feel for the game, knowing when to get in the passing lanes, knowing when to rotate, knowing how long, you know, to stay with the roller and things like that. But also learning, you know, whatever team I play for, their new terminology, their, you know, their principles on the defensive end. I think I'm a quick learner. So with that new information, it'll only, you know, help me get better on defense.
How'd you first get into basketball?
I would go spend, you know, my summers in Sandusky, Ohio, with my dad's side of the family. My mom's side was always around basketball too, but going up there, watching my uncles and my older brother play at the park, and then, like, you know, they toss me the ball and I can't get it up to the rim. So going back home and telling my mom, you know, I want to start playing, and stop going there for summer and start playing AAU and start training and stuff. So
when did the NBA dream first kind of spark in your mind?
Probably when I was around like 10 or 11, you know, kind of when I just felt a little different than my peers who played basketball, who talked about basketball. I just had a different, you know, gravitation towards the game. It just felt like it was for me. And the NBA always stuck out to me. Like, it was like a dream.
Did you know you'd be as tall as you became?
No, I had no idea. Honestly, I don't have any like super tall family members. My mom is like 5'8". My dad's like, let him tell, he's like 6'2", but he's really like 6'1". So I don't have any tall uncles or anything like that that are around my height or taller. So I think I just got blessed a little bit.
Wow. I mean, yeah. You had the vision and you were rewarded, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I'm curious, like, I think for you, I mean, some players, they have, you know, basketball parents, and some people, like, they knew they'd be tall. They have a 7-foot father or whatever. And yet you had this dream. I think when, like, obviously you have a dream. At what age were you when it first become like, oh my God, this actually has a real chance of being a thing for me?
I think around my freshman year of high school, just like I talked about, just you have a different feeling than the people you're around. Like, I felt different. I never felt like I was regular. I never felt like I was going to have the same trajectory as the guys around me. So knowing that I could get better every year and seeing how much growth I made every year. And then also with the growth spurts, like, I went from like 6'1" in eighth grade to like 6'3". I knew I wasn't done growing. So my sophomore year was like 6'5", 6'6". And then, you know, got that extra inch of going to my junior, senior year. So I had the height, I had the size, I had the frame, I had the potential. I always knew the game. I watched the game. So I think I had the opportunity. I just had to work for it. And then when it's that simple, it's easy to go for your dreams.
Does it matter to you to get drafted high?
I think it's more about fit. You know, it's always a dream to go as high as you want to, just, you know what I mean? When you tell your kids like, hey, I was this pick, or, you know, they look back on it. But like we talked about, just making the most of my opportunity, wanting to also look back and say he was a steal, he should have went higher. So I think I kind of got the best of both worlds.
It's just a matter of making most of the opportunity with whoever you're getting drafted, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, I think with you, I'm curious, what's your biggest motivator?
Just, I've always kind of been like the guy that was slept on a little bit. I was never the number one recruit in Ohio. I wasn't even like the number one recruit in inner city Columbus all the time. So just not being a guy who was always, you know, stroked from a young age, who was the 5-star McDonald's All-American, being like the underdog a little bit. Just And I feel like I'm in the same position now. I think that's always been my story, and that keeps me motivated.
Growing up in Ohio, were you a Cavs fan or just a LeBron fan? What were you?
Cavs fan for sure, but then I kind of changed to a LeBron fan when he made the move. So, yeah.
Feels like the whole city was like that, right? Well, it's not some. Some were burning jerseys.
Exactly. You know, it was extreme up there in Cleveland, Northern Ohio areas. I think I was just a fan of the game. So, whatever LeBron did, I was a part of it.
Is he who you're most excited to play against?
For sure. LeBron James definitely is
or
the Reed, most.
I guess. Yeah. Man, who knows, right?
Yeah, exactly. Who knows?
What's your biggest pet peeve?
Traffic. Traffic is like...
You love New York City then, huh?
Yeah, I mean, New York City, she gets me around pretty fast, so I don't have to worry about that as much. But like at Texas, especially like the football game days, man, they shut down the streets. You're trying to get to the facility to practice, and traffic is like, I don't know. It's just for some reason that one bothers me the most, especially because it's so avoidable. Like usually it's just something, somebody holding up the traffic, and it creates...
Oh, I know.
Problem for everybody.
Human choices screw it all up.
Yes, sir.
Gonna have the self-driving cars everywhere, so
exactly.
It'll all be solved.
Yeah.
What do you do besides basketball?
I play video games a lot.
Games.
Like right now, I'm playing. There's a game called Bully. It's a throwback game. It's like it's by Rockstar Games, so the same people who made GTA.
I was a
kid. Yeah.
I'm born 1990. That was like mid-2000s. Right?
Okay, exactly. Yeah, it was a game my older brother, he showed me. So I think they're either going to come out with the new version or like remaster it, but right now I'm still playing the old one. I got it on PS5. So
you can play GTA 6 when that comes out?
For sure, yeah. I'm still on Fortnite too. That was probably the one I'm most talented with, so it's hard to give that one up. But
I have to, I'm on PC. I have to get a console so I can play GTA on launch day.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know they make you guys wait on PC just because, cool. I mean, you have the mods and stuff
some
like
crap,
that.
But I know.
Yeah, you definitely got to get a console.
It's like, I think for GTA 5, they made the PC players wait 18 months.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I can't wait 18 months to play GTA.
Not for GTA 6.
It's
no,
ridiculous.
It's going to be crazy.
I'll be playing. I might take the day off from work.
Me too. I will too.
Miss a game, right?
Yeah.
Last question for you, Dalen. What do you love most about basketball?
I think just how much I learn on the court and off the court, seeing my progression, being able to, you know, reflect on myself from a certain point, whether it was when I was in high school or when I started college to now, always having those moments to look back on, especially playing at this level when everything's publicized. You can look and see, you know, what you were doing at this time, how you looked, what your body looked like. And then also just the people you meet, the connections, the relationships you build through the game and through everybody's shared love for the game. And you see guys that you grew up with, like DP's an Ohio guy, to see him be potentially the number one pick in the NBA draft. Like it's a great feeling seeing guys succeed in their stories too.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how your career unfolds. Dalen, enjoy this week. I'm rooting for you, man. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Big thank you to all of my guests today. Everything is changing very, very constantly throughout the day. Maybe we're going to get a Giannis trade. Maybe we don't. Maybe Giannis is still in a Buck uniform entering draft day. We'll see what happens there. I can't wait to see what happens. We're going to be going live on Yahoo Sports NBA during the NBA draft. It's going to be me, Ice Young, Tom Haverstraw, and King McClure all live throughout the entire first round on Tuesday night, reacting to everything that's happening. I can't wait. I'm fired up for it. Let's go, baby. NBA draft, best time of the year, trade season. Let's see what's going to happen. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode. Thanks to all the producers here at Yahoo Sports in New York City. Have a good rest of your day. See you on Tuesday night.